the Colombian candidate.
They were like FARC rebels. They spoke like rebels. Some had T-shirts with the image of Che Guevara, so I wondered what sort of international commission is this.
Without a hint of brainwashing, Ingrid Betancourt is out of captivity. She says thank you to her rescuers and looks healthy after 6 years in the jungles of Colombia. The former Colombian presidential candidate is free, along with 14 others in a daring rescue by the Colombian military. It's produced shockwaves for Latin America and a bit of a coup for one U.S. presidential candidate, John McCain. Exquisite timing. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It's Thursday, July 3rd, and three American military contractors among those hostages are back in the U.S. today. Some details on the bold operation that sprung them is coming up. Also, a closer look at the statesman like John McCain. Muslims and Jews reach hands literally across the floodwaters in Iowa to save a mosque. And a U.S. diplomat on the charts with a hit in Paraguay. That and all the news. Three U.S. military contractors rescued from leftist guerrillas in Colombia are now in Texas. Thomas Howes, Keith Stanzel, and Mark Gonsalves had been in captivity since 2003 when their drug surveillance plane went down. Gonsalves's mother was thrilled.
God always told me in my heart, Mark is alive and he will be home. And here it is. Oh, my gosh. It's like I'm in a dream. I don't believe it. I don't believe it. That the day has finally come.
The raid is a serious blow to the leftist guerrillas who'd considered those hostages to be among their most valuable bargaining chips.
The Justice Department is considering a policy that would allow the FBI to investigate Arabs, Muslims, and other racial and ethnic groups based on terrorist profiles. It would mark a change in policy against racial profiling. California officials have told the last residents of Big Sur, California, to evacuate in the face of an out-of-control wildfire. More than 850 people have already fled.
The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is warning that an Israeli strike against Iran could make the Middle East more unstable and more difficult for U.S. troops in the region. Navy Admiral Michael Mullen spoke after visiting Israel, and amid international concern, the Israeli government is considering such an attack. President Bush said yesterday the best option is diplomacy to solve the Iranian problem.
The Seattle Supersonics are moving to Oklahoma City. Sonics owner Clay Bennett has agreed to pay $75 million to move the team to his hometown. Oil is in record territory again today, trading above the $144 a barrel level in Asia. The Dow closed down 1.5% yesterday to 11,215. The S&P lost nearly 2%. It opens at a low of 1261. We're picking up a theme from last week, small-scale heroism. It was something that we talked about in a segment, and a lot of you responded at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Basically, if you see something, say something, especially if it's good news.
Good news that you witness or that you are helped by in your community. We want to hear your stories at 877-8-MY-TAKE, or you can drop us a note at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
We've got an amazing hero story from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, coming up. Bet you didn't know that the oldest mosque in America is in Cedar Rapids. That and more coming right up.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com. The Takeaway is supported by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information at knightfoundation.org, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation to enhance public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
This morning, 15 former hostages, including three Americans, are celebrating their rescue after a daring raid in Colombia. Some were held as long as 5 and 6 years by the leftist rebel group, Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC. The raid was a blow to the group's hold and a boost for the government that's long faced criticism. The BBC's Americo Martins joins us now with the latest. Good morning, Americo.
Good morning.
That was one bold operation, almost James Bond-like. Describe how the hostages were freed.
Yes, it was very spectacular operation. Ingrid Betancourt, the most high profile of the hostages, said it was a perfect operation because the military men of Colombia managed to infiltrate the Colombian rebels, the FARC, for many months now. And they managed to also fake a communication between the high, the people that really command the group and the commander that was in the field holding the hostages. And they managed to convince them that a helicopter would come to take all the hostages and bring them to the high commander of the FARC, Alfonso Cano. And obviously that didn't happen. The helicopter was part of the Colombian army. It was disguised as a helicopter from an NGO that does not exist. And only two rebels boarded those helicopters with the rebels, and they were overpowered very easily on air. And not one single bullet was fired, and no one was hurt. It was a very clean operation, despite the fact that there were 60 rebels holding the hostages, and they did not react, and nothing happened, and everyone was freed very quickly.
You mentioned Ingrid Betancourt, who was actually a former presidential candidate in Colombia. She said that they had no idea what was coming. Let's listen.
Suddenly, they neutralized the rebels who had come into the helicopter with us, and the leader of the operation said, "We are from the National Army. You are free. Thank you."
That was a translation of Ingrid Betancourt. She was talking not long after she was freed. Now, there had been many reports in the past months that she'd been very, very sick, but she looked very well.
Yes, the latest video that was released from her some months ago raised all sorts of speculation that she was really ill, she was about to die, that she had lost the will to live. But the scenes that we saw yesterday were quite different. Obviously, she was very happy because she had been released, but apparently she's not in such a bad health. Obviously, she spent 6 years in the middle of the jungle, and that obviously had an impact in her health, but apparently she's not as bad as most people had believed.
Years in the jungle, moving from one place to another to escape the exact kind of raid that happened today. Among the hostages were three Americans who worked for a government contractor that was working on the war on drugs. They are now, we understand, in Texas getting treated. Do we know anything more about the other 11 hostages?
They were all part of the military in Colombia. They were taking hostages in different operations, and they were among the most high-profile hostages the FARC had. And they were keeping them as a bargain, too, with the government. They were trying to use them to extract some concessions from the government. And now, with this operation, the FARC really, really will not have as much tools to negotiate with the government. Well, the government will not have a pressure to negotiate.
Well, you raise a great point, Americo, because the FARC, for the last several years, has been using their sort of hostage money-making tool as a way of funding their operations. They have hundreds of hostages, it's believed, and these are just a few that have been released. What kind of a dent or sort of a hit does the FARC take in what seems to be its main revenue source here?
Well, this has been the worst year for the FARC ever. Not only the hostage, not only the operation yesterday, but this year they lost the three of the seven main commanders they had. Three of them, one killed by its own men, another one killed by the army, and the top man, Manuel Marulanda, died by a natural death. On top of this, what happened yesterday will really have a major blow to the FARC. They will be in a very, very weak position. They do not have, you are right, they have lots of other hostages, but not as high profile as the one that were released yesterday. And this will have a major impact for the future. Also, another important thing that happened yesterday was the scenes of jubilation everywhere in Colombia. They were really celebrating the liberation of these hostages. That just show that the FARC does not have much popular support anymore. Once in the past, they enjoyed some popular support. So, and now even the sources for them to keep fighting are diminishing now.
So this is really a boost for President Uribe, the Colombian president, who has faced some tough criticism, not only at home, but also in the West.
Yeah, this operation happened at the right time for President Uribe, because he was under various pressures, political pressures at home. There was a huge international pressure on him to negotiate with the FARC or to try to find some sort of solution for the hostages. And the manner that they were liberated yesterday, in a very clear operation, nobody was hurt, all the hostages were freed. It would be really, really a big political boost for him. Some people in Colombia are already calling for him to be allowed to be re-elected once more. He has already been re-elected not long ago, and the constitution will not allow him to run for a third term. But there are lots of people already saying that he's the right man to keep running Colombia.
Absolutely. BBC's Americo Martins.
Thanks so
for
much, Americo.
Update.
Thank you.
You know, he really shows the power and the importance of intelligence in an operation of this type. Not a bullet was fired because the intelligence they had was perfect. The insurgents just hopped into the helicopter with the hostages, and that was the end of that. Amazing story.
Which leads to another quick mention, which is the raid across in Venezuela a couple of months ago, where the Colombian military was able to scoop up some of the FARC's computers, where there was a lot of intelligence reportedly that was used to rescue those hostages. Of course, there are still somewhere around 700 still
right.
being held.
Lots of preparation for this raid and probably many more to come. We're going to shift now quickly and talk with Stephen Lieb, who's the author of The Oil Factor. He joins us for New York. You may not have noticed it yesterday, but the NYMEX, which is the place where oil is traded in New York, released some information which indicated that there are bets being placed on the price of oil reaching $300 a barrel by the end of the year. It's a complicated set of trades that are registered at the NYMEX. Stephen Lieb, there are people betting on $300 oil by the end of the year, and I should put that in context. A year ago, there were people betting on $150 a barrel oil right now, and those bets, delusional a year ago, seem pretty smart today. What's going on here?
Well, basically, it's economics 101. There's increasing demand for oil, though the United States and Europe and the developed world have actually been doing a fairly good job of conserving, reducing oil consumption. The developing world, which is about 5.7 billion strong and whose total economy probably exceeds that of the developed world, their needs for oil are growing and growing faster than we can conserve. At the same time, the world's ability to supply oil has been diminished. We really cannot keep up with increased demand.
Well, Stephen, I think that macro issue is pretty well understood. But to make a $300 bet, a 100% price jump between now and the end of the year, you have to be betting on some slightly short-term phenomena, like, for instance, instability in Nigeria, attacks against Iran. What do you think the bettors here on the New York Merck are looking at, short-term or long-term?
Well, I would guess, no, if you're betting $300 for the end of the year, you're definitely betting on some sort of geopolitical event. But there was a time, 10, 15 years ago, where you could have had the worst sort of geopolitical event and you would not have gotten that kind of increase, which would be more than 100% in a 3 to 6 month period. But in today's world, any number of things could do it. An attack on Iran. I mean, that's been in the paper for the last couple of days. I mean, Israel had exercises earlier, I think a couple of weeks ago. Now they've denied that they plan to do anything, but the fact that they did those exercises a couple of days ago, a vice admiral said that we would do everything we could to keep the Straits of Hormuz open. Now, that's where 20% of the oil passes. Anything like that, any threat to shut the Straits of Hormuz could easily send oil to $300. I don't think it would stay there, incidentally. That would be a very, very bad bet, because at $300, the world would probably fall into a very, very severe recession, and that $300 oil would be short-circuited. It would probably come back down to $100 or even $80 or $90.
A global collapse, $300 a barrel oil would burst a lot of bubbles in the global economy. Stephen Lieb is an economics commentator and financial advisor. He's also the author of the book, The Oil Factor. More about oil and the economics of energy inflation coming up on The Takeaway. We'll be right back.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, a forum for examining the decisions that confront people trying to do the right thing. Discussions and more at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning. You're responding to the notion that oil could reach $300 a barrel by the end of this year. Some traders are betting on Wall Street that that is the case. Do you believe it?
Tim from New Jersey. I think that this idea of $300 a barrel oil is ridiculous. I don't think it's going to happen. I think that the price right now is inflated by the people that you're just talking to, the people who are taking the market and falsely driving the price up simply because of greed.
You can weigh in, too, at 877-8-MY-TAKE about this topic or anything else you hear on the show.
And we've also been asking you about your hero reports, things that you've seen, big or small, that are good. If you see something, say something. And for one discovery we made in Iowa, we did find some heroes. People there are struggling to get back to normal in the aftermath of historic flooding. They're rebuilding their homes and businesses. And in Cedar Rapids, they're also tending to a National Historic Site. It is the oldest mosque in America, the Mother Mosque of America, it's called. And it was founded in 1934. During the floods, it was submerged in 10 feet of water. And to the rescue have come neighbors of every faith. Leading the charge is not only the mosque's imam, Taha Tawil, but also Rabbi Aaron Sherman of Temple Judah. Good morning, both of you.
Good morning.
Imam Tawil, tell us about your mosque and how much damage did it sustain?
Well, the mosque has been submerged in the water, and we lost everything we have in the lecture hall, which is in the basement, and our books and our archives and our files, records. Everything we have, the water just damaged it.
How are you coping?
Well, we are accepting God's will, and we are moving on to repair and to restore as much as we can. And this is an act of God, you know. We cannot object on that.
Rabbi Sherman, how did you learn of the terrible damage of the mosque?
Well, I have to admit that at first I didn't even think about the mosque because it, you can't see the river normally from the mosque. And I was at a meeting with clergy, and Reverend Ted Miller asked me, so how's the Islamic community? I said, I knew the Islamic centers, the other mosque, and I knew it was far away, but then it occurred to us that, well, maybe something would happen to the, to unfortunately, the mother mosque. And so I called immediately to my friend, Imam Taha Tawil, and was able to contact some of my other friends who are part of the community, and learned very quickly that of the great and terrible devastation that the mosque has underwent. And so I wanted to reach out very quickly and see how we could help.
And Imam, the rabbi brings us to a really important point, which is the response of your neighbors. Describe what that's been like.
Well, it was overwhelming. It was boring into the mother mosque, and the help really came from all over. First, our community is, have been always the same, have been always cooperative and known to be a global city and known to be respecting each other. And that's what makes the Muslim community grow in Iowa, the Jewish community, the Christian community, even the Buddhist monk and the crew, they came to the same thing. So that feeling is overwhelming to know that this piece of history, of American history, the Mother Mosque, meant so much to many people.
Well, you speak so eloquently, Imam, about the overwhelming response. And I guess, you know, I don't want to get into metaphysics here, but maybe a flood's an act of God. But it really is amazing to see the act of people in Cedar Rapids being a model for religious tolerance and religious cooperation, whether we're talking Muslims, Jews, Buddhists, Christians. Rabbi, how important do you think this is historically for the community?
Well, I mean, this flood is absolutely devastating and has affected everyone. So it's so important that we all come together. But I think what is important that we've had already established some of these relationships so that we're not just starting from fresh. But Imam Taha Tawil was one of the founders of our interreligious council of Linn County. And we formed some of these relationships. And I think this will only strengthen us, but it's going to take a lot of time and effort for the community to come together. Fortunately, the synagogue was not affected by the water, but so we have opened our doors and are trying to help in any way we can. But it's going to take a major effort from everyone in the community to pull us together.
Rabbi Aaron Sherman and Imam Taha Tawil in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, thank you. Coming together in Cedar Rapids.
That's a great story.
Femi Oke is here. She's joining us with the latest news headlines. What do you got, Femi?
Hello there. It's 28 minutes past the hour. Former Colombian presidential candidate Ingrid Betancourt has been freed after 6 years as a hostage of the FARC rebels. She's now enjoying some time back with her family. The Seattle Supersonics are moving to Oklahoma City. And a tropical depression has popped up in the eastern Atlantic off the coast of Africa. It is expected to strengthen and could become Tropical Storm Bertha. Too soon yet to know if it will affect the United States. Oil prices have edged up to yet another record, almost $146 a barrel, another record high. Worries over depleted US stockpiles and tensions with Iran are pushing up prices, as are new comments from Saudi Arabia. The Saudis have announced there are no immediate plans to increase oil production. The wildfire raging near the scenic Northern California town of Big Sur has jumped a fire line. 850 people have been forced to evacuate. One resident described the view from her home.
Middle of the night, I woke up and I stepped out on our deck and we saw shooting flames and heard the roar of the fire. That was really scary.
And that was Dana Gordon, who lives in Big Sur. Continental Airlines and five individuals will stand trial for involuntary manslaughter in France in connection with the crash of an Air France Concorde near Paris back in 2000. The Concorde crashed, killing 113 people after its tyres were punctured by a stray piece of metal on the runway. And finally, the Guinness Book of Records has a new record. Mozilla has the record for most downloads in a 24-hour period, and their new web browser, Firefox 3.0, received over 8 million downloads from around the world. The web browser bumped up its market share almost 20% against Microsoft's Internet Explorer. Not bad for a promotion.
Nothing, that's interesting. Nothing about Jell-O?
We could bring back Jell-O.
Yeah. But back to that Concorde story, that's really interesting. So many years later, I was actually there. It's in Gonesse, France, which is right outside of Paris. It didn't even get 10 miles from the airport when the Concorde went down with a full tank.
Because of a piece of metal on the runway. Thank you, Femi.
You're welcome.
The Takeaway is supported by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live a healthy, productive life. Information at gatesfoundation.org. And by the Henry Luce Foundation for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, now featuring Mandy and Lester, a short film about a girl who loses two boxes of Scout cookies, a boy who finds those cookies, and who finds that returning them isn't going to be as simple as it seems. Available at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everybody. Because of the holiday weekend, the Labor Department has released employment figures on a Thursday. Just released the employment rate held steady last month at 5.5%. although payrolls fell by 62,000, that according to the Labor Department just released. We started something last week, courtesy of the MIT Center for the Future Civic Media, and a grad student came in, Alyssa Wright, who started something called Hero Reports. It was her way of reporting using technology. Small acts of courageousness or heroism all around the city of New York and then graphically representing that on a map. Well, we took her seriously and we decided to extend it to our audience. No act of selflessness was too small. We talked to our audience to tell us stories not unlike the story of the rabbi and the imam there in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Call 877-8-MY-TAKE. My take. That was the invitation for you to tell us your stories of everyday heroism, and we got plenty of them.
My name is Kevin from Southern State. I have been traveling on the roads before. I saw a woman who was stuck in her car on Grand Central, and even one of those help vehicles that you, the trucks you see on the road, was not allowed to get out of his vehicle and help her. So I pulled over, stopped my car, got out of my car, and pushed her off of the road.
Little self-reporting of a hero there on the roadways of New York, and we got a couple of other stories as well.
My name is Bill, and I'm from a little town called Joplin, Missouri. I was taking a friend of mine back from the emergency room and lost a tire. And the truck pulled up behind us. Tire was completely gone. Well, the fella took my friend home, took me to a tire store, and bought me a completely brand new tire.
Hi, my name is Jeremy. I'm a substance abuse counselor in the Bronx. I was running a group last week, and one of the clients in it expressed a desire to start getting high again. And after the group, one of the younger clients had gone to her, spent a considerable amount of time talking to her, talking her out of what she wanted to do. I guess it's something that happens every day. It just struck me. It's just a total act of selflessness.
Listeners can submit their hero reports on our homepage at thetakeaway.org. You can also find the MIT heroreports.org that links to a map of reported sightings of heroic acts all over the city of New York. That's on our webpage at heroreports.org or thetakeaway.org. So now we're going to go diplomatic here and check south of the border. The U.S. ambassador to Paraguay, I kid you not, is topping the charts. The song is Campo Jurado. It's written and sung by the U.S. Ambassador to Paraguay, James C. Kaysen, who joins us on the line. Well, Mr. Ambassador, hell of a job.
Well, you know, I never thought I would be singing. I never sang in my life before February, but I've been trying to learn over the last 3 years the native language here in Paraguay, which is Guarani, very difficult. And in the process, I was using their old folk songs as a way to learn the vocabulary, and it sort of got into the singing business.
Well, sort of got into the singing business. I mean, your single is, like, really popular in Asunción and all over the country. Why do you think it's hit a chord?
Because Paraguayans are afraid that the new generation is forgetting the old traditions and the old folk songs. They're sort of into rap and reggae, the young kids, and the older generation has been trying to get them to focus on how beautiful their music is, and I come along and began singing their 16 of their songs, and it just sort of hit a chord that they're just very appreciative that a foreigner would learn their language and sing to them in their own language.
You know, I'm used to diplomatic speak, Ambassador, but you sound poised and confident, just like you came from American Idol last night.
Well, you know, as I said, I never sang in public before. I was invited to go sing before 10,000 people with 3 days' notice in four songs in Guarani, and I did it, and I was just so amazed at the reaction. I said, look, I'm not a professional singer, so please forgive all these mistakes that are going to occur. And the people were just overjoyed, and I went on from there.
Well, here's a serious question. I mean, the reputation of U.S. diplomats down in South America is more the kind of ugly American connotation. It seems like you've really blasted that out of the galaxy. Give us a briefing on Paraguayan-U.S. relations. There's been an important election there just recently.
There's been a very important election, the first time there's been a peaceful transfer from one party to another in almost 200 years, and great expectations here with the new government that it will be able to bring about a more prosperous country. There's a lot of people immigrate because of lack of jobs and a lot of corruption, and so the people voted overwhelmingly for a bishop first time in a long time that we've had a religious person running for election. He was chosen with 40% of the vote, and the people are put their hopes in him. And we've had excellent relations with the previous government and a lot of programs here, so we're planning to continue to engage and hope make this a successful government.
Ambassador, I should point out, you are outgoing ambassador. You are retiring, correct? This is your last diplomatic posting?
That's right. I'm finishing up 40 years in the Foreign Service. I was in Cuba before I came here. And I'll be leaving on August 2nd, so this is sort of my swan song, so to speak.
And you're going to open a club in Miami, is that right? Or did I get that wrong?
I think I'm going to sell worms to fishermen, do something useful for a change.
All right. Ambassador James C. Kaysen, who wrote and sang the hit song Campo Jurado, which is on the charts there in Paraguay. Ambassador, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.
What a way to end a diplomatic career.
Love that guy.
Now we have headlines from Femi Okeh. What do you know?
Hello there. It's 21 minutes to the hour. We have had reports from early on today that the president of Zambia, that's President Mwanawasa, has died, but there are now conflicting reports about the state of his health. Zambia's vice president apparently is denying the death of the president. We will get onto that story and confirm that as soon as we possibly can. Just out in the last couple of minutes, we've had new figures from the Labour Department. The US payroll shrank for the sixth consecutive month in June. The unemployment rate held at 5.5% last month. And three American hostages rescued from leftist guerrillas in Colombia yesterday are safely back in the US. Zimbabwean opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai has rejected talks about forming a unity government. He says President Mugabe must stop the violence first. An American airline says it could cut up to 900 flight attendant jobs as it reduces flights due to the high fuel costs. As we move on with the rest of your news, Kroger Foods has expanded its beef recall from 2 states to 20 states over fears of an E. coli outbreak.
Since it's coming from a supplier that provided meat that was linked to illnesses in another part of the country, we decided to pull everything we get from that supplier.
Kroger is notifying customers about the expanded recall by placing signs in stores and using its register receipt notification system. 19 people have been hospitalized from food poisoning. Now, after each show, we do have a team meeting. And in the team meeting yesterday, Adora says you have to talk about this story. It's about watermelon having the same kind of chemical breakup as the drug Viagra. And if you eat enough of it, it could actually help you in the leisure department.
Something. Is this medical news?
It's
the watermelon industry is promoting this?
Not the watermelon industry.
I see.
But
yeah,
you need 6 cups just in case you wanted to know.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. You know, this weekend, Hollywood has another take on heroism.
Hancock's latest act of so-called heroics has once again enraged city officials.
I can smell that liquor on your breath.
Because I've been drinking.
Will Smith in the blockbuster Hancock leads off the movie releases for this holiday weekend. Jeffrey Robertson joins us from Wyandanch, New York. Jeffrey, I think it's safe to say that a lot of young men and women are going to be going to the movies this weekend to watch a character who, frankly, it's probably safe to say needs a little bit of counseling. Wouldn't you agree?
I certainly would. Good morning, John. I would certainly say that this weekend will be filled with theaters for people that really love Will Smith. But when they get there, they're going to be surprised because this was a great movie.
Well, we asked Jeffrey Robertson, who's a counselor and recovering alcoholic and addict, who's something of a hero himself to the people he counsels, and we'll talk about that in a moment, to review the movie Hancock, which comes out this weekend. But we really wanted to talk with you seriously about the issue of role models, because someone like Will Smith, and in a movie this big, is going to be a role model for all kinds of people. If you were going to counsel in the movie a character named Hancock, what would you tell him?
Well, actually, because I have personal experiences with this character, because I'm in recovery, as you mentioned, and I do counseling in my community. The issue here is that no matter how much trauma that you've been through in your life, drugs and alcohol will always destroy. And this is what, I don't want to give too much of the movie away, but this is really the central theme of Hancock. He's a troubled man. He's a superhero, but yet he has troubles because he is caught in the grips of addiction.
Well, Jeffrey, let's listen to one of his troubles. Here's a clip from Hancock.
You broke my glass. I'm sorry. Take my Raven. Put it down. Huh? You want down? I'm real good at down. I'm real good at down.
He's real good at down. He's got superpowers, but he needs a little anger management work, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, absolutely. That was one of the funniest scenes of the movie. He really has problems identifying his anger, but he's really has lost control of the things that he really is trying to find. He can't figure it out, and so he destroys everything around him, and that's what alcohol and drugs do. It destroys everything. It destroys you. It destroys families, loved ones, and people that are trying to reach you, and they can't figure it out, and it's like you need an intervention. And somewhere in that movie, I don't want to give it away, this begins to happen for him.
You know, the reviews suggest this movie needs an intervention. Do you think there's a deeper story here that people are going to enjoy, regardless of the bad reviews?
I hope that people will actually be able to see the movie for what it really is. And I know people that are in recovery will identify immediately with this character. And it's really a rampant disease in our society today. You see it all the time with teenagers driving under the influence.
Right.
It's just something that's rampant. It's really rampant in our communities.
Quickly, Jeffrey, just a second. What superpower would you want?
To be able to fly.
Okay, that's it. You got it. You can fly. Jeffrey Robertson is a counselor and recovering alcoholic and addict in Wyandanch, New York. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Today's conversation on The Takeaway is supported by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, asking what is responsibility in this day and age? Everybody has their own opinion. Discussions and more at responsibilityproject.com.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everybody. You may not have noticed it, but as the Colombian government was announcing to the world that it had rescued 15 hostages in a daring raid in the Colombian jungle, including three American military contractors, a plane was taking off from the airport in Colombia bound for Mexico City. It was the campaign plane of John McCain, who was in Colombia as the raid was executed. And actually got some advance notice that the raid was taking place. The John McCain campaign trip to Colombia and Mexico City just yesterday seemed like a fairly dubious proposition. But John McCain is suddenly in the middle of all the action. And joining us now is Elizabeth Buemiller from The New York Times, who was on the plane with McCain as he went from Colombia to Mexico City. Good morning, Elizabeth. What does John McCain make of his exquisite timing here? Or is he kind of avoiding the whole business?
He's being careful. He was informed about the raid along with Senators Lindsey Graham and Joe Lieberman on Tuesday night before it happened. He had a planned meeting and was meeting with the president of Colombia, President Uribe, and they were informed. The group was informed about the raid that they were planning it and that they hoped to carry it out on Wednesday. And McCain obviously said nothing, but he did allude to the hostages being held by the FARC, the insurgent group in Colombia, and he also in his formal remarks in this press conference, and then he also said, and I really pray for the Americans, the three Americans being held, and it was kind of a surprise. Nobody expected him to say it quite that specifically, but now we know what was on his mind when he said it.
Right. Does something like this help John McCain in making him look more statesmanlike, or does it get in the way of the issues he was trying to showcase, particularly the free trade agreement between the U.S. and Colombia that he supports, the Bush administration supports, and that Barack Obama is opposed to?
I think it does a little of both. I think, you know, he talked on the plane when he got a call from Uribe on the plane that this had been successful. And then everybody else was getting calls. So it took him a while to come out because I think he was reluctant actually to take any credit. I mean, obviously it had nothing to do with his visit or anything. But so he issued a very, you know, pretty brief statement. And he talked, answered a few questions. So on one hand, yes, here he is meeting with these in the high level, you know, classified talks with the head of another government. On the other hand, yes, it certainly overshadowed his second day on the trip. The first day, he did get a fair amount of attention, at least in some places, for his talks. You know, his talking about free trade.
Well, final question, Elizabeth. Let's look forward to his meetings in Mexico City this week. The chief U.S. State Department official responsible for the war on drugs gave an interview to the Financial Times, suggesting that the drug war in Mexico threatens the entire democratic infrastructure in Mexico City. What do you think John McCain is going to be discussing with the Mexican President Calderon?
The drug war, absolutely. Yeah. And he will probably say Mexico, Calderon has made great efforts, but a lot more needs to be done. I mean, Calderon has, you know, deployed 30,000 Mexican troops to work with the federal police in 9 states in Mexico. But at the same time, there's been little effect. So I'm sure he'll talk about that, and he will also talk about immigration, and he'll say that he wants to work with Mexico on securing the border. That's been one of his big campaign issues.
All right. Well, certainly an ebullient and enthusiastic-looking John McCain, both on the plane and at his various events on this unusual foreign trip for a presidential candidate, covering the McCain campaign. Elizabeth Buehmiller of The New York Times. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Well, John, it's certainly hard to escape those rising, skyrocketing, record-breaking oil prices. We've certainly been reporting on it, and we usually try to take one slice of it, and we're going to do that again today, and that's rice production, because there's really a twist here. Global rice scarcity has boosted prices of rice to record highs.
They're getting the best prices they've ever gotten.
Ever. But still, American rice growers, well, they're barely breaking even. Gary Fiorinelli, why aren't you making any money?
Well, the cost of oil has got a lot to do with it. You know, everything we do, we have to pull up to a diesel pump or a gas pump, and you see what this high price of oil is doing. It's driving up our cost of production.
Gary Fiorinelli's family farm grows rice in Cleveland, Mississippi, which is about 120 miles south of Memphis, and chairman of the U.S. Rice Producers Association. And Gary, can you break this down for us? In other words, you're selling your rice, but you're getting almost double than what you got a year ago, but still those production costs are taking all that away?
Yeah, a year ago, let's say our production cost was running between $450 and $500 an acre. Now it's over $650 per acre because of the fuel. And just the day before yesterday, our local energy provider here gave us a 28% rate increase on our electricity bills, which that affects everyone, not just farmers, the local consumer also. So that's what we're looking at, and the freight to get our product to market has doubled also. So
your gas prices have gone up to make the deliveries. Your electricity bill's 30%. And I can't imagine you're the only one. Rice farmers today are in a real bind. So what do you do?
Well, we try to hold the cost down. We hope we have a good crop and get some, good weather, have a good bumper crop will help. But it's you really don't know how you're going to come out until the end until you get it in the bins and have the product to sell.
How anxious are you? It just seems like it really is ironic that these rice prices, you're getting more for the rice that you're selling, but you're still terribly anxious. And how much would that be? How anxious?
Well, you know, when this year started, we started booking rice, contracting rice. You know, let's say it went up a dollar from last year. So we started contracting rice at that stage. Had no idea that the fertilizer cost and the energy costs were going to go up as much as it had since we started booking. So really, that was a mistake to book that early. with the high production costs we're looking at now. Fertilizer has doubled. Last year we were paying $11 for a gallon of herbicide. This year it's going to $42. So that's the kind of stuff we're looking at.
$11 to $42.
Right, a gallon.
So those same kinds of production rises, even though the prices are the best you've ever gotten, are going to ripple throughout the agricultural economy. I imagine rice isn't the only commodity that's having this problem.
That's right. Fertilizer is used what you see, like you might see, let's say, soybeans on the Chicago Board of Trade might be trade for $15. But that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to get that, because when they take off the freight to get it where it needs to be, we might be down to 10. Or if we booked it, you know, not everybody is booked for $15. And that's what we're looking at, stuff like that.
Tough times. Gary Fiorinelli. Thank you. Gary is a second-generation Mississippi rice farmer and chairman of the U.S. Rice Producers Association.
And it's going to just rise that much more. The European Central Bank announced today it's raised the interest rate to 4.25%, which is going to put pressure on the dollar, which puts pressure on energy prices, which is probably going to get oil next week sometime above $150 a barrel. That's my prediction.
I'm sighing. We want you to keep your responses coming to anything you've heard on today's show. You can send us your stories to 877-8-MY-TAKE.
We're talking about the freed Colombian hostages, the constantly climbing cost of oil, and John McCain's trip across the border. He's down in Mexico City today. We also got a movie review from alcoholism counselor Jeffrey Roberson of the movie Hancock, which you know what it's about, right?
I do.
Alcoholic superhero. You like that movie?
I'm going to go see it.
Jeffrey liked it, and he's not the only one that liked it.
John from South Dartmouth, Massachusetts. Hancock is a tremendously good movie. Also, my wife and I love the definition of a hero is nobility of purpose. It's an excellent movie, and I agree with your guest.
You can comment on anything our show, especially if you see something, say something. Go to heroreports.org or call 877-8-MY-TAKE. And the website is www.thetakeaway.org.
And while you're on that website, our website, you can also check out our new Facebook game, the 2008 Veep Stakes Buy and Sell, potential running mates for Barack Obama and John McCain.
You can literally buy them and literally sell them. I think a hot commodity on that market these days is Mitt Romney. But go to the website and find out. We're on YouTube, iTunes, and Facebook. Join the discussion any way you want. 877-8-MY-TAKE. Our email address is mytake@thetakeaway.org.
And the takeaway for the day is...
I think I'm going to sell worms to fishermen. Do something useful for a change.
A diplomat going to sell worms there in Miami.
That would be the U.S. ambassador to Paraguay, who's also a big singing sensation. Yes. He has a song on the charts, at the top of the charts.
Mr. Kaysen, if you think you have a better candidate for a line for the takeaway line of the day, I actually thought your rice guy had a good line.
Which was?
Take soybeans. You can see them at 15, but if you didn't book them at 15, they could go down to 10 by the time they're down the truck to you.
Yeah, they're really in a bad situation. Yeah, he says they're crossing their fingers.
There's always a takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry.
And I'm Adora Udoji.
The Takeaway is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, advancing journalistic excellence in the digital age. More information at knightfoundation.org. And by the Rockefeller Foundation and its Campaign for American Workers. More at rockfound.org. This is The Takeaway.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.